On this episode of the podcast, I sit down with Stephanie Rühle. She is a current German state champion in powerlifting, PhD of neuroscience candidate, and my lovely fiance. Are you taking photos of the microphone?
No. Ooh. Or Snapchat.
I guarantee you I get a fart in this podcast at some point. It's like, hey man, there's no editing here. This is the real deal. It's like, it's funny because Todd's always like, oh, don't worry, we can edit stuff out. And I'm always like, yo, dude, I don't want to edit anything. Like, I don't think these things should be edited. I don't like that. That's me, personally. I don't like that.
Well, it depends, like, unless there's something, you know.
I mean, there's something that like someone's some like, yo, like, I actually really don't want that in there. You know? That's fine.
Or there's like a noise disturbance.
Yeah,
or something.
But like,
or there's like a break in the middle, or, you know, something like that.
But like, two of my favorite podcasts, they regularly take pee breaks. And it's just like, one will go, and the other person just like rambles for a couple minutes. And it's usually pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right. Water is done. Initiate more coffee. We're gonna get all blacked out on coffee.
Yep.
Yeah. Which would be perfect. Because then we're gonna go see Star Wars!
Yes!
I'm such a nerd about that. I love sci-fi.
I know, man.
But I've heard it's really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, all the reviews are good.
Yeah.
All right, coffee. Coffee is engaged. Engage more coffee. Mehr coffee. Los geht's.
Auf geht's, schnell, schnell.
Auf geht's. Auf geht's für Podcast machen, bitte.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let me sit my butt down. Mm-hmm. Oops, I made a big mess over here. I spilled coffee everywhere. My bad.
You already getting jittery?
No, I'm good. Man, yesterday, though, when I was hitting that deadlift, that heavy deadlift, I had the carbon pre-workout, two cups of coffee, and a 200-milligram caffeine pill. And I was sitting there, I was like in between my rest sets on Instagram.
Shaking.
Naturally, like anybody that's training does. Mm-hmm. And I'm like looking at my thumb, and I was like, oh, man, that's not good. But then in my head, I was like, no, that's good. Harness that.
I mean, that's why you need the intra workout food too, right? Because I usually overdo the caffeine before like heavy sets too.
Right.
If you eat in the middle of it, it makes it better.
Right. No, I think I have a level of caffeine intake where I'm like, I'm good. I feel a little bit out of control, but I'm not going to throw up.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'm okay. But then there's a fine line where all of a sudden you're like, oh no, I don't like this. And then you breathe deep into your balls on a heavy set of squats and you're like, oh, I'm going to sleep.
The only time I ever overdid caffeine was on my first meet. Because I took two caffeine pills and I drank two energy drinks, which was then like 800 milligrams of caffeine.
Oh my god.
And I thought I was going to throw up before squats already. Huh?
Yeah.
Louder.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're so cute. Dude, 800 milligrams of caffeine is a lot.
Yeah, I know.
And you're what? That's when you were lifting 72s?
Yeah, so I was always lifting 72.
How heavy is that? Bro, put your phone on silent.
Okay, Entschuldigung.
Was?
It's like
158. Yeah. Just under 159.
Yeah.
Dude, that's a lot of caffeine for someone that weighs 160 pounds, basically.
I know.
And that was your first powerlifting meet?
Yep.
When was that? That wasn't that long ago, right?
That was 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. When did you start powerlifting? I mean, I have a general... It was...
Yeah.
What, like 2.5 years ago?
I started powerlifting 8 weeks before my before my first meet.
You started powerlifting 8 weeks before your first meet. Yeah. Why? How come? Okay, so this is, I find that interesting because everybody keeps asking me, like, when are you going to do your first meet? Are you doing your first meet?
Yeah.
And I just keep, well, for me, it's like I'm having so much fun with training and everything is going really well, like in terms of progress, and I feel really healthy, and I'm getting wicked strong.
Yeah.
Like I'm having so much fun that putting a meet in there doesn't really, I don't have any interest in it yet.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm still getting that. But what made you get into that right away? That seems fast. Like 8 weeks.
Well, so when I did the first meet, so, you know, Luz and I, we were still doing the whole YouTube thing.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And I had done my last figure show 3 months before that. And then she was like, okay, she wants to do a powerlifting meet because she wants to put powerlifting on YouTube more for women.
Right.
And she signed up for this beginner's meet. And I wasn't really convinced by it. I was still in the whole bodybuilding scheme. And I was like, okay, I don't want to get... I was in the mindset of like, okay, I don't want to get fat. I don't want to get big.
Because you, how long have you been bodybuilding for that time? You've done some shows and stuff, right?
I've done some shows. I would say training-wise, like 5 or 6 years. But I've, like, shows I've done only for the last year.
So then, for 5 or 6 years, you basically killed yourself from the inside out.
Yeah.
To look good.
To look
quote,
good.
Look good.
To look good.
And get on stage and have a bunch of people who look like trash decide whether or not you look good.
Exactly.
You ever notice that? Have you ever been to bodybuilding shows? You look at the judges most of the time. You're like, God, dude, lay off the fucking Cheetos and get more than like 3 hours of sleep a night.
Yep.
I mean, not all of them, but I've been to shows, like certain shows around this area where it's just like, well, who are you to judge whether or not I fit some mold?
Because
you don't even come close, pal.
I mean, especially for the female competition parts, unless you're like really doing the bodybuilding one, which is which is like very few people who actually do that.
Sure.
If you don't do that, most of like a big part of it is just what the judges find beautiful.
Sure.
Which is completely, you know, it's not objective at all.
Right, it's completely subjective to the individual.
Yeah, so you're just dependent on who sits there and whether you're their type or not.
Right, right. And that's not, that didn't work for me.
No, that didn't work well for me either.
Yeah. So you got done with the bodybuilding stuff.
Yeah. And it was just... and so my friend was like, she wants to do that, but she doesn't want to do it alone, and whether I would just sign up with her.
Yeah.
And that was basically like 3 months before the meet, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it, but I don't care what I'm gonna do there, I'm just gonna do it for her. So that's why it took me that long to actually switch to powerlifting training,
right.
You know.
Right.
And then like 8 weeks before, I was like, okay, maybe I should go a little heavier and stop doing 15 to 20 reps and try this out
right
before the meet. So that's when I switched. And then and then 8 weeks later, we did the beginner's meet for powerlifting.
What does that mean, beginner's meet? I don't even know what that means.
It means that they're a little less strict with all the rules.
Okay.
So
it's just an introduction into the scene of competition with powerlifting, basically.
Well, so they do want you... Yeah, they do want... It is a real competition, but, for example, what happened to me was that... I did my first squat, and then after that... They counted it, but then after that they told me that, you know, for example, one rule is that your socks are not allowed to touch your knee sleeves.
Right.
Which is something I did on the first rep because I just didn't know that.
I'm still learning all that.
Yeah.
Shit.
And then they, you know, like if something like that happens, they still count it, but they will tell you afterwards.
Okay. That's actually really, that's nice that you get that kind of introduction.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I didn't
Like, for example, if you don't squat deep enough, that will still give you 3 red lights.
Which is obvious.
Yeah, right. But like little rules like that, or for example, also on an official meet, you have to wear the right underwear, for example.
Right.
You're not allowed to wear any underwear.
So that's no underwear, correct?
No, you have to wear underwear.
Dude, that...
But it has to be... So...
What if you don't... No, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Fine, I'll wear underwear.
Yeah, but you have to wear, you know, like the brief... It's not allowed to have
legs.
It's
not allowed to come down onto the leg.
Yeah. And then it also has...
Because it could give you... So if you wore, like, For instance, if you wore underwear made out of denim.
For example, yeah, it could give you...
one hell of a bounce out of
the bottom. But also, like, I think you're only allowed to wear cotton.
Okay.
You know?
Right.
Because, basically, just because they want to make sure you're not wearing anything which could give you an advantage.
Yeah, it could give you,
give
you an actual support.
And also then, for example, the reason why you have to wear a singlet is so that everything's tight and they can judge your depth
right.
in the squat.
Right, makes it easier to see what is almost,
and then,
some
for example,
people is very difficult
if
to
you
see.
Would wear boxer shorts underneath them and they crumble up,
they
that makes
up.
It harder for them to judge. So
that makes sense.
Where that's
okay.
forbidden.
All right.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So things like that, they took less strict on a beginner's meet. But it's still everything else. Like, you still have to go through all the three lifts and all your three attempts. And
right. Okay, so yeah. that was your first introduction into it.
Yeah, and then I never went back.
I gotta do one eventually.
I think you should.
Yeah,
because it's also, I feel it gives you a more purpose for your training.
Right.
Because you know what? I mean, obviously, you want to do a meet at some point, but right now, you have no feeling yet for what it will actually be like.
Well, I mean,
For example, you're someone who you're someone who bails out pretty easily when stuff really gets heavy.
Damn, babe.
But it is true, because you're not used to.
I love how German you are. It's the best. It's true. You bitch out.
You bitch out. All right. But the reason is because
I did initially, for sure. For sure.
But what I'm saying is, for example, if you do a meet, you get put into a situation where your mindset will, you know, it'll not let you bitch out anymore. Because you will be like, okay, I'm in a competition situation.
Right.
And I have to do this. And you will grind it out no matter how it feels. Because you're not thinking about getting injured then. You're not thinking about, you know, whether this is a beautiful squat or not. You're just thinking about, I want to get those three white lights and I want to get this lift. And if you've done that in a meet, then I feel like you have that mindset for your training too, and it, you know, it makes it, you just go harder in your training too.
How that transition from bodybuilding to powerlifting was probably pretty, especially for a woman, right? Probably pretty intense.
Mm-hmm.
Big change.
Mm-hmm.
How did you manage that for yourself? Were you training at that time? Were you training in like a normal? Globo style gym, or were you training in more of like what we train in now?
No, at this point I was training in a more like Globo style gym, because, you know, with all the bodybuilding stuff that I wanted to do, I use a lot of machines and like cable towers and all that stuff.
I want a cable. We need to get a cable tower.
Yes.
At SLSC.
Yeah.
Hey, John Lee, I'd like a cable tower, please, so I can do curls, push downs. Face pulls, etc. Thanks.
Lat pull downs.
Yeah, lat pull downs too. Yeah, I need lat pull downs too. Thanks.
Bitte schön, John.
Bitte schön. Okay, so you're at that Globo.
Yeah. But the funny thing is that, so I think like 3 weeks or so before I did the beginner's meet, I started talking to Mark.
Yeah, okay.
Who's you know, that's our...
Who's our coach?
Our powerlifting coach.
Mark McQueen.
Yeah, yeah.
The man.
Yeah.
The young man. I always forget how young he is.
He is so young. But he doesn't look that young.
He doesn't look that young.
Yeah.
He doesn't...
Act that
he's
young.
Very mature in the way he runs his training programs, his business,
mm-hmm.
basically,
mm-hmm.
right? The way he talks. I love Mark. Mark, we love you.
We love you.
If you're
you.
Listening to this. You've changed my entire training reality.
Well, mine too.
You're amazing. How'd you learn about Mark?
On YouTube.
Yeah.
So Mark has a YouTube channel where he posts videos of all his training.
What is his YouTube channel?
I think it's just Mark McQueen.
I'm going to look it up right now.
Because
we need to give
and
him
anyways,
a, we need to give him a hard shout out on this podcast.
Yep. And at this point, he was still in his training phase where he was like, This crazy guy who hit his head on the wall before lifting and like
just
yell
like the classic powerlifter
he,
stuff.
He,
that
he like
think
freaked
of.
Out before heavy lifts and he yelled stuff in Scottish and I didn't understand a word.
Yeah,
but
it's
it was,
Mark. His YouTube channel is Mark McQueen and that's McQueen. That's awesome. That's I feel like that's a perfect name.
Yeah.
I love when, like, I've heard videos from, like, the, you know, like, the British Nationals or whatever, like, the local meets, and it's like, Mark McQueen. Like, I can't do the accent, but I'm like, dude, that name is perfect. Like, it sounds so perfect with the Scottish accent.
It does, yeah.
I think I just did an Australian accent. Sorry, Mark. Whoops.
But anyway, so, I mean, I started, because I switched to powerlifting training, I watched a lot of YouTube videos about it. And then at some point he popped up, like, one of his videos where he freaks out and hits his head and yells stuff and then deadlifts a fuck lot of weight. That's the first video I saw of him.
Sure.
And then I started watching his videos because he has a lot of informational stuff on there too. And then I commented on his videos too, and then we started talking. Yeah, and then he basically, like, a week after I did my first meet, he started coaching me.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
Now, what was the biggest thing you got out of that transition? You know, because for me, obviously, prior to doing powerlifting, I've done it all.
Yeah.
You know, like, I did what I now, looking back on it, I would consider almost powerlifting training, playing football in high school, and then briefly in college, where it was like, yeah, we need to get you stronger, but it was the same stuff, right?
Yeah.
Squats, heavy presses, whether it's bench press or vertical presses, not a ton of pulling upper body, but a lot of, like, deadlifts, lots of hang cleans, lots of fucking hang cleans, you know, in football training. But then now, you know, after going through, like, bodybuilding for a while, doing some, I did P90X at one point, don't knock it. That shit works, just like any other program that you follow hardcore for 90 days will work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then CrossFit for like two-ish years, 2.5 years, something like that. Albeit not what I would consider traditional or classic CrossFit. Can you press the French press?
Yeah.
More coffee, please.
More coffee.
Yeah. You know, and then making that switch to powerlifting, which, you know, like, the fat boy in me was like, well, what am I going to do for cardio? Not cardio, but, like, what am I going to do to stay fit? Like, I'm going to get fat. I'm going to be just, like, a cheeseburger head powerlifter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which made it somewhat easier because you, my beautiful fiance, train as a powerlifter.
Yeah.
And it exposed me fairly early to, like, okay, just because you're a powerlifter doesn't mean you need to be a total shitbag about nutrition.
Yeah.
And you just, like, well, I mean, we do eat Oreos mid-training session a lot. but you know, like, I'm more consistent with nutrition now than I was ever prior in any of my other training protocols. And for me, it's been an eye-opener to where, you know, in my past experience, it was like, all right, I need to get real technical. I need to be very broad with what I'm doing. I need to be very specific on certain days with certain movements, but I need to do everything, which is kind of that classic CrossFit model of, like, expand your boundaries, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's bad, but I've done squat, deadlift, bench press, and accessory work like upper body push pull, bodybuilding stuff, and some fun stuff for a total of, I don't know, maybe 16 weeks now.
Yeah.
And I'm stronger than ever. Yes, I've probably lost some of my endurance, but I'm still very athletic.
Yeah.
Like, I do my muscle ups every day.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's exposed to me that you can do almost anything and truly do any type of training protocol as long as you really focus and do it really well, and then also sleep well, take care of your stress management, and don't eat like a fool.
Yeah.
You're going to get good stuff out of it.
Yeah.
And it's really given me that confidence. And I was terrified of lifting heavy.
Yeah.
You know, I tore my pec really bad like 2.5 years ago. Training with football teams, you don't see sometimes the greatest technique, and it's a lot about success and not about how necessarily you do it.
Yeah.
So I've seen some pretty weird and hairy stuff happen in training facilities when I was playing football.
Yeah.
But now, like, it's given me that confidence, like, yes, it's heavy. And I don't know how many times I've said to you in warm-up where I'm like, this is heavy. And you just look at me like, this is what you signed up for, you idiot. And of course it's heavy. It's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Where, you know, like yesterday, pulling that deadlift, which was a PR for me, There was nothing but confidence going into that.
Yeah.
It was more about relax and slow down and do the small stuff right.
Yeah.
You know, music was off. There was no music. You don't need music to lift heavy people. You don't need music to train hard, everybody. So stop telling me to change the music. I could go off on that right now. But, you know, like I've gotten to that point where I turn my music off when I lift because I want to hear my breath. I want to make sure that my cadence of everything is perfect. And that's what powerlifting has given me, is that focus on the very small parts of everything is what is important. Mm-hmm. The overall thing is like it's either success or failure. That's obvious.
Yeah.
You either make the lift or you don't. But I found for myself that the way I usually screw it up is by missing those small, small tiny. I mean, you and I talked about when I was taking my first breath the other day.
Yeah.
And my immediate reaction in my head was like, that doesn't matter. But it was like, no, that really does matter.
Yeah.
It could matter even more in competition.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, what is that given to you? Because I think being a woman, one thing can be very difficult in any gym. But particularly a gym like a CrossFit gym or more of like an open flow gym that caters to powerlifters and strength athletes and bodybuilders and anything. That's got to be a little bit intimidating.
Scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Scary is probably a better word than intimidating.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, there's like multiple aspects to what it has given me. So I think powerlifting as a woman gives you a lot of confidence because you have to put yourself out there. So most of the gyms I've gone to so far, like in the beginning, I was always the only woman. It was always only guys and me. And then depending on what gym you go to, it can either be, if it's mainly powerlifters, it's usually they're very including. Like although powerlifting is an individual sport, people are very supportive. Even if it's like your direct competitor, you know, if you know, okay, if this girl lifts, I don't know, 5 pounds more than me, then she will win and I will lose. You know?
One of the biggest things I've noticed with
that. You still support
amazing
each other.
Amazing support.
You're still
especially
just,
the women.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys make friends with each other so quickly.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, that's the person you're trying to beat, babe.
I know. But I'm also proud of the woman next to me for lifting more than me.
Right.
Because I know how hard it is to get to this point. I know how hard it is to go out on this platform where there's basically 95% men staring at you lifting. So, I mean, but that's something you only learn once you actually really get to competing. Because while you're training, like the gym in Germany where I went to in the beginning, it was only me. Now we're more because some of the girls who are there now like saw me on Instagram and then came and trained at the same gym with me, which I find awesome. And but also the gym I went before that, that was the global gym. And there you had like a lot of guys coming to me were like, you're beautiful, but you should stop training. Cause if you gain more muscle, you'll be too manly. And stuff like that. Right.
I've seen you naked. You're doing all right.
Thanks, babe.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of guys coming up to me telling me that, or people are also like, men like not taking you seriously, although you outlift them just because you're a woman, you know. So,
right.
You build up a lot of self confidence, which was a huge thing for me, especially after coming from bodybuilding. Because if you do bodybuilding, you really easily fall into this behavior where like every morning you weigh yourself, you look at yourself in the mirror, and you like look at all the things which still need work and which you don't like, and you know. And then like switching from bodybuilding to powerlifting, I mean, it's basically a switch from the way you look to the way you perform.
Huge difference.
And I mean, there's only one thing: either you lift it or you don't. And that's it. It's not like, and at that point, if it's a PR, it doesn't matter whether it looks beautiful. It doesn't matter whether you're, you know, like whether you have a little belly or not, you lift it or you don't.
Power bellies are my
life.
Power
bellies,
yeah. I love power bellies.
So, I mean, that was a huge thing for me because then training was for performance.
Right.
And not for like, just looking good anymore, mm-hmm. which is a big thing. But then also, I would say, because I mean, I knew how to squat, I knew how to deadlift, I knew that before I did that. I just did it in a different, you know, percentage and like rep scheme. So I would say the biggest change for me from powerlifting was mental.
Oh, yeah.
Because learning to really go over 100% and to really grind a rep out, you have to have a lot of confidence in yourself, in mm-hmm. your body. You have to learn to be able to switch your brain off. Because in the beginning, I mean, I think everybody has that. If you try to lift heavy, you just get scared.
Your thoughts are, I'm still working on that.
Yeah. And for me right now, I'm like, if I go for a PR, I'm not thinking anything.
Right.
There's nothing in my head. I just lift.
Yesterday, or when I was squatting, when was that, Monday?
Yeah.
All I was thinking about is don't pee. Because I was getting all nervous, and I peed like 5 times.
Well, I've peed on deadlifts before.
But you're right. It's such a mental game. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. That's mm-hmm. the best part. It's the best part. When you can get over that where you're... I mean, I've had it where single lifts, heavy singles in a training cycle, and I'm in the middle of the lift, and I realize I'm not thinking.
Yeah.
I'm just acting. I'm just performing the lift in the cadence that I always do it.
Yeah.
And it caught me off guard.
Yeah.
When we did my first mock meet when I was in Germany.
Yeah.
What was it? It was my third attempt on bench press, right?
Yeah.
I realized I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
And then my butt came off the bench.
Yeah.
Because I got distracted from not thinking and just doing, and I started thinking about the fact that I was not thinking about anything, right? And when I then went to deadlifts, and on my third attempt, which I should have made that lift, I thought, mm-hmm. I started thinking about how I wasn't going to be able to lift it, and I stopped pulling.
Yeah, I know.
And then you yelled at me.
And then I yelled at you.
And I got embarrassed. But yeah, sorry, interrupted. Because that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
For me, that's what it is. It's a huge thing.
Yeah. But I think it's for everybody. That's the main thing I think you have to learn. I mean, obviously, also you have to get the form right and everything. Because you don't want to attempt a PR if your form sucks. And you're putting yourself at risk. But then I think the main thing is really mental. Mm-hmm. And once you learn that, then... And you always go through phases, you know.
Right.
Like I'm not confident at all in my squats at the moment, but I'm very confident in my deadlifts. Well,
I think that's partially due to the lack of power rack at our gym.
That is a main thing because I never did a heavy squat without a power rack,
right?
Or like any form of security.
I am your power
rack. I know, but you know, like the like last week where I did fail. Right. I was then sitting that in the bottom, like with the bar on my back, and was like, "What the fuck am I doing?" Now?
Yeah. we have the safety bars.
I know,
now,
which, but it's not the same. A power rack, it gives you a lot.
It gives
of security.
You ultimate security.
Yeah,
you know, no matter what, that bar is not going to hit you.
Yeah,
you may hit the bar when you like bail out of it, but we'll get there. I'll just buy one eventually.
What I'm also just saying is like because you're all like. All the time, you're still improving little things on your lifts.
Yeah.
And therefore, you usually always have, like, one or two lifts which go really good and one lift which sucks. And that alternates.
Mm-hmm.
So you always have one where you're, like, really not confident at all.
Yeah.
And then, like, suddenly, like, in the next cycle, it switches to a different lift.
How do you feel, what stage of life are you in powerlifting? Because I think in general training, there's you are a brand new baby. You're this cute, moldable, little, topsy-turvy baby can be exposed to anything. Anything can destroy you, but you can also be really good at everything because it's brand new and there's just continued success. Yeah, I mean, I think I'm still that with powerlifting.
Yeah.
Where every cycle has seen huge improvements because it's... I mean, I think it's a little different for me because I do have a huge background in strength sports and I have a huge knowledge, mentally and emotionally with this stuff. But just doing powerlifting training is brand new.
Yeah.
So I'm still just, Mark can throw basically anything at me, and I think I'm going to be able to progress with it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he could just kind of bullshit onto a piece of paper, and if I do it, I'm going to progress.
Yeah.
Where then I think you move into that adolescent stage, which in the CrossFit world, we see a lot of issues start to happen then, right? Because either people, they're not taking their training as serious as they think they are.
Yeah.
Or the stuff outside of the gym is a total shit show.
Yeah.
And they think it's just that they're not training hard enough when really they're not recovering hard enough, or they're working too much, or their nutrition sucks, or their sleep is absolute dog shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those.
Yeah.
And then there's that like mastery level.
Yeah.
And there's probably smaller, intricate parts in between there, but you know, you take someone like Mark, our coach, this is, it's his life, it's what he does. Nothing is done without consideration to his ability to compete at the world level of international powerlifting. Like, where do you think you fall in that? I'm more coffee.
You need more coffee.
Yeah, can you hand me the half and half?
Yeah,
bitte schön. Coffee break.
Coffee break.
And no, we're not editing this out. I don't like edits.
Well, we don't need edits.
Well, I know, but...
You haven't said anything too embarrassing yet, I guess.
Well...
Except peeing and...
Yeah. I did mention that I peed during my squat.
Well, I mentioned that I peed during my deadlift.
It's, well, it's more a question of how strong is your pelvic floor.
Well, it's also how...
Silent, quick silence.
It's also how deep do you breathe into your ball?
Dude, real deep.
Because if you breathe really deep, it just presses down. Yeah, we had one somewhere.
Okay.
It just, you know, it just presses down on your bladder.
Where do you think you fall in that category of age, of training age?
I think it kind of depends on my lifts.
So
for example,
the individual lifts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'm at the same level at all of my lifts.
That's interesting. I never really thought about it that way.
So, for example, I would say that, for example, on my deadlifts, I'm more at an intermediate kind of level, because I'm I can deadlift over double my body weight without problems. So,
What are your I'm going to interrupt you. What are your current maxes? Let's do it this way. What are your current competition maxes? Because I think that's an important thing. There's a different thing between posting a video of your max that is completely questionable on whether or not it fits the rules of your competition and whether or not it's a bro rep with somebody at your gym being like, oh, that was good. Where it's like, I don't know about that.
But you have to convert it because I have no idea. So on my squats, I did 120 kilograms.
All right, so 120 kilos. So, and this is in the 72 kilo class?
Yes.
Okay, so that's 168 in change in terms of pounds. Or sorry, 158 in change in pounds. You squatted 264.6. Okay?
Okay.
That's back squat.
Yeah. I benched, what did I bench last time? I benched 62 and a half.
That's 138.
And a deadlift at 150.
330.75. And that's at 160 pounds.
Well, I never filled out my weight class before, ever.
Right.
So I'm
that's
under that.
That's fucking mega.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that you're going to be my wife soon, but that reiterates how much I love you. You're such a badass.
Thank you, babe.
You know, and that's the thing. Like, it's a, you know, when I first met you.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was immediately attracted to you.
Yeah.
And then I heard your accent, and I was like, oop, German. I'm going to go act like I can really speak German. Which at the time, like, I could understand a lot.
Yeah.
But I couldn't really speak it, you know, when we met, like, over a year ago.
I think you...
Now,
yeah,
it's
I think
different.
You asked me where I'm from in German.
Yeah. No, it was the same. I'll tell you, because this is what I did when I worked in retail.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime we had flight attendants come in on, like, Lufthansa or Swiss or whatever, they'd come to the water tower to shop.
Yeah.
And as soon as we'd get someone with a German accent, anybody in the store would be like, hey, German.
Yeah.
Right? And it would be, what was the conversation? It was the same thing every time. Not that I was like being a skeeze or anything, but it's like, you know, I think it's nice. You get,
yeah.
You know, but it would always be, I generally would ask someone where they're from.
Yeah.
Like, you know, kommen Sie von Deutschland or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. And then it'd be, was machst du hier in Chicago? Arbeit oder Urlaub. Right. It's like, what are you doing here? What are you, why are you here in Chicago?
Yeah.
Work, vacation, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and then they would usually, there'd be a little bit of conversation back and forth and, you know, what are you shopping for? Things like that.
Yeah.
Right. But then with you, we were both training at that time. You dropped into the gym.
Yeah.
I was still doing CrossFit. I had hair.
You had hair.
It was a lot lighter. And I think, I can't remember what you did first. I feel like you bench pressed first that day.
No, I squatted.
You squatted first.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And I think I was doing something where I wasn't really paying attention, but then you started bench pressing and I was like, holy shit. Like you started pulling 45s off the plate racks and I was like, whoa, I don't, maybe this is like a kilo issue, you know?
Yeah.
Cause I think I said something to you and you kind of looked at me like, yeah, I know. And I was like, oh dude, you're such an idiot. Like you look like such a fool right now. Right. And there's that video or there's that picture from that video of like you're bench pressing and I'm over at my rack acting like I'm not staring at you. And I'm like, holy shit. Like this chick is so strong. But you don't look like, I think if you just see you, if someone saw you in street clothes, you don't look like this, like, muscle jacked person.
No,
you're not. You just look like a normal woman, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, you get in the gym and you're wearing like a tank top and like some tight compression shorts. Like, you got arms on you, you got a butt on you. You know, you look like you train hard.
Yeah.
Right. But you're not like overly muscle bound and going crazy.
No.
You know.
No.
I don't know where I got down a black hole on that. I got excited.
I also don't know when we were talking about what you think, where I'm like what.
Oh yeah, like training age.
Yeah,
like where you stand with that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you were saying it's up to the individual lifts that you feel differently.
Yeah,
which is, that's awesome because I've never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
At all.
Well, like for example, I think like, then I can, for example, in my squats, I feel like I'm very far at the beginning still.
Because
there's still so much that I have to work on form-wise.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Right.
That I feel like with every cycle, I'm still learning so much technique that I'm not at a level at where I'm actually really working for the kilos or like for the weights.
I'm working for the technique.
And then like with every step that I like improve my technique a little, I obviously also can add a little bit of weight to my squat, but I don't feel like that's the limiting factor for me.
So you're telling me that improving movement patterns and technique is what makes it so you can go heavier?
Yes, that's what I'm telling you.
You don't just go heavier to go heavier?
No. I know you would love that.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's interesting because I have to think about that for myself.
Yeah.
I'm very confident in squatting. But that's because I've been squatting like heavy barbell back squats, whether it's like a box squat, a high bar squat, albeit I'm new to low bar squatting.
Yeah.
That's been new with powerlifting, but even then, I think with my build, my low bar squats are fairly similar to my high bar squats.
Yeah.
I was definitely blessed with fairly decent proportions, I think, for powerlifting, except for my arms. Makes bench press a little tough.
But it makes your deadlifts easier.
It makes my deadlifts great.
Yeah.
But like squatting, I'm very, very comfortable with.
Yeah.
There's nothing, I love unracking a bar when it's super heavy.
Yeah.
And you get that kind of rush where you're like, am I going to black out before I even squat?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Those I'm really, I would say I feel very comfortable and I'm definitely like an upper intermediate when it comes to squatting.
Yeah.
Again, low bar's new, so it's taken some adjustment with hand position. You've introduced the concept of chalking my back, which at first I was like, that doesn't make a difference. But then when I had a bar slide off my back last week, and then we chalked it up and was like, oh, wow, this is actually totally different.
Yeah.
Deadlifts were something I was terrified of. And I think I told you this
for a
very long time.
Yeah.
I could deadlift pretty heavy, but I was terrified of it because I just didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
I didn't have a bad deadlift. The concepts, obviously, it's what I do as a profession. I mean, I knew how to deadlift really well. But it just didn't make sense. Physically, when I was in the position, mm-hmm. I didn't feel comfortable enough to be powerful, to be fast,
yeah.
and to be in a correct position while doing that.
Yeah.
Because I think it's one thing to be in the correct position, but not be effectively powerful.
But you were also doing them. The thing is that when we met, you were still doing them CrossFit style.
Right.
So
I was doing the high ass RDL.
But that also means that even if you would do the right form, you do it once per set.
Right.
Well, if you completely reset, like you're doing powerlifting, you do it with every single rep, right, which gives you a lot more.
When I learned that, it's like I wasn't doing the deadlifts necessarily that wrong. I was doing the setup. I wasn't even thinking about it.
Yeah.
I was totally skipping that.
Where
I've learned, like, it's all about what happens before the bar ever leaves the floor.
Yeah.
Like, you are working before that bar leaves the floor.
Yeah.
And I know all of our members, if you've been in my classes, you know how obsessive I am about that now.
Yeah.
And this idea of pulling tension into the bar and building huge amounts of tension and pulling slack, pulling into the weight. But that's been my biggest, I think, success with powerlifting is deadlifting.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm getting there. I'm past that kind of baby stage. You know, that heavy single yesterday, that was a PR. I think I could have probably done that for a set of three. You know, like, it felt that comfortable.
Yeah,
like, yeah, it was fucking heavy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to act like it wasn't heavy, but I knew I was in the right spot.
Yeah,
and that's why the thought of not of ever stopping the pull was not there.
Yeah,
and I was thinking about you staring at me and being like, come on, man.
You
know? And then bench press is my comfort zone.
Yeah.
Again, I've now gone wider with my grip, mm-hmm. which has been also kind of an exploration for me.
Yeah.
Because all of my all-time personal records with bench press is all in a close grip.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's all because I spent so many years with football training that closer grip. And not a, you know, like tricep press style bench press, but a grip in which your elbows track closer into your ribs, which would be very conducive to playing offensive line with football, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I still have a ways to go to get back to, you know, the mid 400s in pounds for a bench press where I was also being really fat then, being much fatter, much more fat, being very fat. But, you know, I think that's also, even after tearing my pec, like, I still feel incredibly comfortable holding a lot of weight in that position.
Yeah.
Because I know it's like either I'm going to lift this or not. Now, I still occasionally think about that when I tore my pec because I didn't expect it when it happened.
Mm.
It was just like, holy shit, what just happened?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it was on a warm-up set.
Yeah.
It wasn't even on like a heavy working set.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting way to think about it,
mm-hmm.
of a lift by lift, where do I stand? Which I think if you look at the general training age thing, that's important to look at when you get to that kind of middle ground.
Yeah.
When you're not, you know, 6 weeks into ever being in a gym.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to be further, maybe a year into training. Then you start addressing it from a movement-to-movement basis.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good way to think about it. Nice. I'm learning so much. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it also what plays into that as well is, you know, like what you already said, like how you're built anatomically.
Right.
Because if you're just built well for a specific lift, you'll be able to progress much faster in that lift compared to a lift where you have less of an advantage.
Yeah.
For example, that's the thing with me. Like, I have really long arms. I basically lock out my deadlifts just were like very slightly above my knees.
Yeah.
So I'm very well built for deadlifts. So
your range of motion is very short.
Yeah. And it's like, but then on the other hand, I have very long legs. So
squats.
Like for squats,
yeah, it's
like a really long way for me. Yeah.
Keep going, babe.
You're still not there.
Keep squatting. Low skates.
So, you know, like especially in a sport like powerlifting where you have to get very specific with, like, a limited amount of movements,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that plays a very, like, a very big part in, like, how, what training age you are at, what lift as well.
Yeah. But it's good.
Yeah.
You're doing well.
Thank you.
Current state champion, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah, still.
Which state in Germany?
Nordrhein-Westfalen.
Yeah. I knew that. I wanted to hear your accent.
No, you say
it. Nordrhein-Westfalen?
Yeah.
It's all right. trying to kill the R's.
I know.
But I like the R's. I've been listening too much on Rammstein.
Rammstein. Yeah.
Okay.
I couldn't do the German championship because I've got too busy with my PhD, but yeah.
You got too busy with your PhD.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting, something I wanted to talk to you about in going with our conversation with this is that, you know, we talk to a lot of people about their progression in training.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of, I think, feedback from people that they think their training is not going well. Right.
Yeah.
But it's really that their life outside of the gym
is
a complete shit show.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's their own fault or just the nature of the world they live in.
Yeah.
That is affecting their ability to progress and train at the level that they want to train at.
Yeah.
And for you, that was something that you've trained very consistently and very hard for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's shown in your performance on the competition floor, but even more so, I think it shows in the fun that you have in the gym with your training.
Yeah.
And then the reality of you being a PhD candidate for neuroscience came into play a few months back. And in the final kind of months here of obtaining your PhD in neuroscience, you came to the conclusion that you couldn't do both at a high level.
No.
You couldn't train for the German national championships and then also finish your PhD and give it the same amount of time and effort that you needed to.
Yeah.
That the thing you'd been working on for, what, 6 years, 7 years?
Seven.
7 years mm-hmm. was more important than going to German nationals and competing.
Yeah.
And on a personal level, that made me realize that you were the type of person that I need to be around and I need to be with. Because I'm the type of person that would have basically sacrificed my own personal well-being and everyone around me to make sure that I could do both.
Yeah.
Because I'm too hard-headed to try to be successful at everything that I do.
Yeah.
Like an annoying level to some extent, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Sorry. but you know, I was very impressed with that, where it was like, I remember when you told me I'm not going to compete at German Nationals. It made my heart break. And I got upset because it was like, well, what do you mean?
Yeah.
You know, like, it for me, and I'm not saying that you are giving up, but in the way I look at stuff, that's the way I would feel about myself if I was doing that.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think that my will sometimes is not as strong as other people's, where I'm like, you're giving up. Because I cave on myself all the time with that stuff.
Yeah.
But then I realized, like, you were making a conscious decision to recognize that you could not handle the workload in front of you. And you had to prioritize what was the most important.
Yeah.
And it was like, this is the ultimate example of someone who has their priorities in front of them and is making a very difficult decision to sacrifice one of the things to make sure the other one, in this case, your PhD in neuroscience, got the effort that it deserved.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And We talk to so many people in the gym about this, where it's like, look, it's not about what you do today. It's not about what you do this week.
Yeah.
It's not about what you do this month.
Yeah.
It's, if anything, at a minimum, it's what you do over a 12-month period that determines training success and other things of success within the gym.
Yeah.
Right? And like, for you, you sacrifice the German Nationals altogether, completely.
Yeah.
And you're basically your general training program. And I programmed some stuff for you to just have fun. You took some time away from the gym to make sure that you could spend, you know, 14-hour days in your lab and in front of your desk. But that screams volumes for your ability to comprehend what is important in front of you. And especially someone in your state where you're the current state champion where you're from. And you were willing to walk away from the German national championships, and albeit under probably a little bit of pressure from different people and different things.
And watching it, and then seeing that I could actually have won.
Yeah, that's really tough. Yeah. But you made that choice, and that's incredibly brutal. And I hurt for you with that, because it was like, I know how hard that you worked leading up to that point, and you were still able to make that decision and stick with what you've been working on in your PhD.
Yeah.
Well, amazing.
I mean, it was a very tough decision for me too, because I basically had been working for that for like for like 1.5 years.
For
like
the
Mark and I, like, I mean, we obviously we did long term planning for my, you know, like training and progression to the German Championship. But I also feel like, you know, there's situations where you just have to make a decision.
Right.
And I'm not good at doing things less than 100%.
I know how that feels.
And for me, it's rather, I would rather, you know, make the decision to drop out of nationals and maybe do it, I mean, maybe do it a different year, or probably gonna start competing in the US at some point.
Hell yeah.
You
can bait, you can take care of me while I freak out about my first power.
Yes, I will. But no, you know, like, I would rather do that than go there and like give like and like only be able to do like, I don't know, 80% of what I was planning to be able to do.
Right.
And I think it's also like you just have to recognize that there's only so much, you only have so much to give.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're at a point where you already given more than you've ever given at any stage in your life and it's just not working out, then you have to make a decision like that. And at that point for me, it was like, okay, at this point, I just need to focus on my work and get that done. And then, I mean, that doesn't mean I'll never, ever compete on, you know, like at a high level powerlifting meet anymore.
Yeah. No, you're right back into it.
Yeah.
Our training has been awesome lately.
I know.
It's been great.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like, I'm actually proud of myself for being kind of a, I mean, to be honest, like, I see it two ways right now, you know, because if I look back at the last 6 months or so of my training, I didn't progress in my lift, but I basically kept the weight, you know, like, I didn't mm-hmm. lose strength.
Mm-hmm.
And that's although I had to cut down on my training, like, I've only been training 3 times a week now.
Right.
And sometimes even less, because I just had so much work to do. So just to be able to, you know, like, maintain my strength in that time period.
You didn't lose all the gains.
No, I didn't.
So
no.
Everybody's scared of.
So that's, I mean, that is still, like, a very positive thing for me.
I would argue now, that you've come out healthier, too.
I probably did. Yeah. No. Yeah. Probably, yeah. I mean, you have to take breaks in powerlifting, too.
Right.
You know, like, some, even if you look at the very, you know, like, world level people, they sometimes take 2 years off.
Right.
Just because it puts so much strain on your body to compete all the time.
It's the same way with Olympic weightlifting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You see some of the best lifters in the world, albeit most of them taking PEDs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shit ain't clean. Bullshit. Right?
Like, yep.
Some of those guys will take an entire year off. Like on an Olympic cycle. They'll take that a whole mm-hmm. first year off. And it's just like, oh, it's just probably too, because it's a fucking grind.
Yeah,
you're training twice a day, 5 days a week. It's your entire life.
Yeah,
you're like, I don't want to go to the gym.
Yeah,
I want to do anything but that sometimes. Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing too then, you know, like, I was losing the fun in my training.
And that's dangerous.
Because the problem was that at that point I was like, as you said, I was working 14 hours. I probably slept like 6 hours per night or so, or sometimes even less. And then if you go to the gym and you're like, and you're not progressing at that point anymore, because I mean, how are you supposed to progress?
And that's one thing that I was terrified about.
And then when I was still in the mindset of wanting to compete at the German Championship, I just got depressed with like every training session I did, because I mean, I didn't progress.
Right.
And then after I made the decision that this was not my priority, it started to be fun again, because, you know, I could just work.
Yeah.
For me, at that point, it then was just like, okay, I'm going to go to the gym and just have fun.
Yeah. And that's a huge fear for me always with people. It's like, if you stop having fun,
then
this
you
isn't going
to
go. And
something.
I say this to people all the time.
Yeah.
And again, people that are listening to this that have been in my classes at the gym, I say this all the time. Nobody's winning money from this today. Right? So we got to have fun.
Yeah.
First and foremost, you need to be safe. But then on the back end of that, you're here to have a good time.
Yeah.
This is probably a certain level of stress management for most people, aside from just training.
Yeah.
And if you are putting yourself in a position to emotionally destroy yourself in the process, that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Now, if you're doing this competitive, you consider this you are a professional in some type of strength sport, whether it be CrossFit, powerlifting, Olympic weightlifting, whatever. Yeah. Your job is to win. Your job is not health, wellness, and fitness. Your job is win.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean that you're going to necessarily always be injury-free. And it doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to be happy and having fun all the time. And it's like, you need to shut up and do the fucking work that I need you to do.
Yeah.
But in general, most people, it's like, look, if you are hating yourself in the gym, you need to rethink what you're doing.
Yeah.
You need to prioritize things appropriately. Take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Eat a fucking cheeseburger.
Yeah.
And then get back in the gym and have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I was afraid with you during that time frame was like, I don't want her to not have fun.
Yeah.
Because for you and I, that's a big thing for us in our relationship.
Yeah.
And I think people are probably sick of it already. Like, when we're in the gym together, we have fun.
Yeah.
Like, it is, no question, it's work. Mm-hmm. And we work really hard, but it's fun.
It is.
And
fun.
I think it should be fun.
Yeah.
You know, because when you do have to kind of buckle down and bite the bullet, then you can. Because you've had a good time up to that.
Yeah.
You know? And it's not for everybody. I get that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like on Facebook with Romy. She's like, I wish I had that gene.
Yeah.
It's like, it's okay if you don't have that gene. You know, some people, I work in a gym basically 5 days a week, and I'm working on the gym 7 days a week. And I still find a way to shut that down for a couple hours, 4 days a week, to have fun working out in the place that sometimes I hate being.
Yeah.
Because it's my job, right, to be there.
Yeah.
And it's hard, I think, to pull yourself out of that and then put fun into that position.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that you didn't lose that.
No.
It makes me happy that you didn't lose that in that process.
Well, I lost it for a time.
But you recognized it.
I recognized it, and I talked to Mark about it. And I think that's one big thing, especially if you are like on a strict like training cycle where you're like for a very long time you always have your program.
Right.
You have to be very open to your coach about how you feel about your training, even if it's stuff where you feel like, okay, I'm just being a bitch, I just need to do it.
Right.
Like, because I mean,
a huge part of coaching is basically being a therapist. It's emotional support. It's asking questions. And it's working to get real answers.
And there's always things that you can do.
I'm not asking you how your training went. How are you?
Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
You know, what is happening?
Because all of that plays into
it. All of it does.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So you're a neuroscientist.
Yeah.
Are you a mad scientist? What does it mean?
Like, what does that mean?
Well, because I get this question all the time
from
people. Right? People are like, oh my God, she's a neuroscientist?
Yeah.
What's her PhD in? And I'm like, neuroscience? They're like, whoa. I'm like, yeah, I know. I still have no idea what that fucking means. I'm like, I'm pretty sure she does, like, neuroscience. Brain stuff, probably.
Yeah. Most people always think I'm a neurosurgeon.
Well, yeah. That's
I'm
what,
like, no.
whenever I talk to people about, like, well, what is she going to do next? Is she going to work at a hospital?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why would she work in a hospital?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
No, but I'm not a medical doctor.
What does it mean? When someone asks me, what is a PhD of neuroscience, what is that?
So, I mean, the science of neuroscience is about how the brain works and how the nervous system works.
Okay.
And that includes animals as well as humans. It's not only based on humans.
Right.
And then obviously there's a bunch of different fields, and they're going from like genetics, like what ion channels are in neuron type A compared to neuron type B, and what happens to them, you know, like how are they expressed in evolution, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Basically up to how do we do math?
Right.
You know, like it's a very broad field. You can do a lot of things.
Is that why you kind of got involved with it? Because you have your master's in biology, right?
No, I have a bachelor's in biology.
Okay.
And then I have a master's in neural and behavioral science.
I have a bachelor's of communications from The Ohio State University.
Congratulations.
Which is funny because I'm a terrible communicator sometimes. But I'm really good at nonverbal communication.
I think you're pretty good at communication.
Well, thanks, babe.
Yeah.
Danke schön, meine Liebe.
Yeah. You give really good motivational speeches.
It's because I get fucking... I'm like right now, I'm getting blacked out on coffee.
Coffee.
I get real excited.
Yeah.
Especially if it's deadlift day. Yeah. I get real, real aggressive.
Yeah.
Real direct, you know?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so you have all these degrees.
Mm-hmm.
You got into neuroscience.
I got into neuroscience, yeah. And... Yeah, so, I mean, the field that I'm at right now is... so basically, what the group that I work in, we are interested in how animals use sensory information to produce certain behaviors.
Okay.
So how do I go from seeing something in my environment to... For example, running away from a predator. How does, you know, like, how's that connected? It starts, for example, it starts at the eye. So, you know, like, which part of the retina, which is the part of the eye where, you know, like, the light gets detected?
Right.
So, are there, like, specific parts in already there, you know, like, which are used for predator detection? So, you know, like, do I always orient my eye to see predators with a specific part of my eye? That are things that we are interested in. And then that goes up to, for example, some of the things that I do is, like, if you then look into the brain, are there, like, organizations, like, you know, for... I mean, we know that there are specific parts of the brain which are used for vision, but mm-hmm. then are there structures in there, as into like what parts are processing what information from your insight?
I think this is a broad question, but there's this idea that humans don't use a majority of their brain power,
mm-hmm.
or maybe not even power. Maybe that's not the right word, but use X percentage of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
How does that look? Is it true? Like, do we only use?
We have no idea.
Or is it just that we have no idea?
Because you have to see. Neuroscience is still a very young science.
Okay.
It has been existing for maybe is like that due 30, to 40 years now.
Newer technology allowing you to actually study more, or is it
yes?
Or is it just that no one really cared about it up until 30 or 40 years ago?
I think a lot of it is technique based. Okay. We're still lacking a lot in techniques to be able to really answer, you know, a lot of questions of how the brain works. But yes, a lot of it has been technique, because I mean you need to keep the tissue alive somehow and then image it. But also, if you just look at the pure numbers. You know, even like a little worm already has like 20,000 neurons. So to be able to say what his brain does, you need to somehow record data of like 20,000 neurons at the same time, but be able to, you know, like visually locate each of them separately, then look how are they connected, and then, you know, come up with a model of whatever, how that works. And then, but then you even have like, okay, is each worm the same? Probably not. Probably depending on what input they got while they were growing up, they're a little bit different. So then you need to compare between worms.
Independent variables change everything.
Yes. And then bring that up to a human who has millions of neurons, you know.
I'm starting to see why you had to prioritize this over a treadmill. Because I'm already getting overwhelmed.
Like,
and I'm going to my coffee cup for safety. Like, I'm hiding over here.
No.
Yes.
So, coming back to your question, to be able, we don't even know yet what using your brain means. You know, we know like certain patterns of activity, which mean that this, you know, like this part of your brain is active, but there might be other ways that we just haven't seen yet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no way for us to answer that question at the moment. We were like very, very...
So this is almost a thing where it seems to me that neuroscience is almost... You're trying to learn about something that you almost don't even know what you're trying to learn about. and that you don't even know where the barriers lie.
Yeah.
So you're
you might be
looking at one thing and realize that, which I guess this is how most things have been created in science in general, where it's like, we're going to do this. And then you look at your data and you're like, actually, we didn't do what we thought we did. We did something totally different, but now we don't even know. That leads now to 10 more questions that we don't know the answer to.
I mean, that's the thing with science in general. Like, a lot of times you come up with a theory, mm-hmm. and then when you have a theory, you come up with a specific question, and then you do experiments to answer that question.
Right.
But that is something which is kind of... this global theory is what is still lacking in neuroscience.
Yeah.
We don't have... I mean, there's like little, you know, like little parts of it, but there's no like bigger theory of like how it works.
Is that something that you like about neuroscience or that you hate about neuroscience? Or somewhere in between?
Somewhere in between.
Because that would that would drive me fucking crazy. Because I'm a very much like... this coffee cup is here.
Yeah.
That I can prove it because I'm holding it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm terrible with theoretical concepts. Not that I don't, like, believe it,
but it's, more
it's
like,
hard for me to not... I need tactile proof that something exists.
But on the other hand, it's, you know, like, having a surprise.
Right.
You're like... it's like...
but I'm terrible
you
at surprises.
Open something up and you see what happens, and then you come up... I mean, like, a lot of experiments in your sense at the moment are... you do an experiment, you get results... and then you come up with theory.
Okay.
Of like, what does that
mean?
That's
interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a very new, it's still a very young science. So there's a lot of stuff to do.
How do you, because I think, how long, okay. So you're, what in the States we would consider continuing education or like post. Post grammar school education, basically college.
Yeah.
You have a bachelor's, a master's, and you're finishing your PhD fairly shortly.
Yep.
How has that changed your mentality towards education? Changed over the last, what has it been now, 12 years of continuing education past high school?
Yeah.
How has that changed for you? What does that look like? Because,
what do you mean?
Well, like for me... you know, I got my bachelor's degree now almost 9 years ago, mm-hmm. 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned what not to do getting my bachelor's degree.
Yeah.
I mean, my grades were pretty good. Like, I just went to class. I didn't take advantage of probably a lot of things that I should have when I was at Ohio State.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mom and Dad, for paying for my education. By the way, I love you. I didn't realize how valuable it was at the time, but I do very much so now. My concept towards educating myself has changed a lot.
Yeah.
And that's mainly due to the people that I surround myself with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for one, being in a relationship with you, with my business partners who are constantly educating themselves. And, you know, they got me reading books, which sounds stupid, but, like, I just never... I didn't like reading because I get distracted too easily.
Yeah.
I read something and then I start thinking about it and I realize I'm not even reading anymore, you know? But it was like the exposure to learning things that I'm not good at instead of just trying to learn more about what I am good at.
Yeah.
It's changed the way I view education. And I feel like for you, you know, you've gone through this process of continuing education and now you're getting towards the end of what I think is the ultimate level of education, which would be a PhD.
Yeah.
How has that changed? Because I kind of get a feeling for you that it's changed. I mean, I know on a personal level, your mindset towards this stuff has been a little bit scattered over the last 6 months. And I think that's due to workload and an emotional strain, which is obvious for anything. But, I mean, like, what does that look like? How has that changed since, like, I'm going to do science and change the world to I fucking hate science and I never want to do it ever again?
Yeah.
Which is, like, I'm embellishing that a little bit, but I think to a certain extent that's where we stand,
basic,
right?
Yeah, I think that was pretty much exactly what happened.
Do you need more coffee?
Yes.
Right.
More coffee, please.
Like, how do you feel about that? Because we see... a lot of what we do at the gym is we work with people.
Yeah.
It's not just strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
I mean, I would argue that I spend more time working on people and not working on their ability to bench more or squat more or nutrition. Like, we spend more time just getting people to be better with themselves and better at being themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know.
I mean, I feel like that's two-sided for me. Like, I will always love education. I will always love science.
Yeah.
Because I always love to learn... Because I always love to learn new things. And, you know, I don't ever want to just stop and, like, be stagnant at where I'm at. It might not always be science that I educate myself in, but I always want to...
Turn the heat off.
And then, you know, like, doing a bachelor's or doing a master's is basically just someone else telling you what to read and what to learn.
Mm-hmm.
While when you do a PhD, and I mean, obviously the programs are different, but you either pick a topic yourself or you get a topic from your supervisor, but then it's all on you.
Yeah. You know, I've noticed
you
that.
That's the most impressive
thing about you with your PhD. There is nobody else forcing you to do this.
No.
I've watched you drag yourself through 14-hour days for an entire year now. And I'm like, I would have said fuck this like 20 times already.
Yeah.
And you've come close to that, but there's always something in there that's been like, nope, I'm going to be stubborn and I'm going to do this.
Yeah. Well, I'm also really bad at giving up.
Well, that's good. Something I love about you.
But, yeah, so, I mean, what a PhD teaches you, I'm basically done now. All I have to do is write up. So, I mean, obviously, I still have to learn the writing process, but I would say...
At this point, I think
the main part of my, you know, like, my education as a PhD is done.
Right.
What it makes me feel like now is, like, you can give me any topic. It doesn't matter whether I've ever heard anything about that before or whether I've done that before, I think I can do that and I can handle that. It might take me a little bit longer if it's something that I've never ever heard about. But you know, if I go out now and apply for jobs, I'm not scared of that at all.
Mm-hmm.
To do something where I have no clue.
Oh yeah, that's nothing.
Because that's what I've done now. You know, that's I've learned that. I know what I need to do.
Is that specific to the process of getting your PhD, or do you think that's also with neuroscience? Because it's a black hole, kind of.
I would say it's a little bit. I mean, this is obviously just from my side. I've only done a PhD in neuroscience, but I think to some part that is true for every PhD that you do. But I would say it's a little bit different or a little bit in like natural sciences. So not only neuroscience, but everything like, you know, like chemistry, biology, physics. Because the thing is that you have all of those fields have to do experiments. And usually if you do those experiments, they're based on something where you have no clue about it. You know, if you do a PhD in law or in engineering or whatever, there is certain facts that they're based on. There's a certain framework which doesn't change.
Mm.
But all PhDs that you do in natural science is a little bit, you know, like the black box. You have no idea what's happening because you know it's the world. It's science. You know, I can see that, for example, so we have people in our department who do PhDs in computer science because they write models for the data that we come up with.
Right.
And obviously their PhDs are also really tough. I'm not saying that they're easier or anything, but they're different in the way that you work with a computer. There's only so much, you know, you're not dependent on a living being. You're not dependent, you know, like there's less possibilities for stuff to go completely the other way than you expected them to go.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you have to, that's usually also why PhDs in neuroscience or in natural sciences take way longer than PhDs in other fields.
Right.
Because stuff goes not the way you expected it to be. So I think what you learn a little bit more in a PhD in that field is patience and perseverance. Just for example, for me, I've done the exact same experiment over and over and every single day for like 3 years, every day. And every day I went home with nothing. And I came back the next day and did exactly the same thing. And, you know, like in other fields, it would be like, okay, now I change a parameter or, and then you test out every parameter that you have. And at the end, and at some point, you get the results that you want. Well, for me, it was just like, I have no idea why this is not working because it's this black box of biology. So I'll just keep on trying over and over again until it works.
Oh, yeah, it's giving me so much anxiety. that is, how have you done this? I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, so, you know, but that's why I feel like whatever you're going to make me do, it cannot, it cannot be harder. I know how to do this now. I know how to deal with it mentally. It might push me to the edge, but I mean, I'm not scared of anything anymore. That's, in that field. But to come back to like how I see education, what I also see is I think the field of science, the way it is set up, is very cruel, and it's not in the favor of science.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way it is set up is
Okay, technical difficulties apparently there, but we're back.
We're back.
Okay, so
yeah,
where that left off, you were saying that it's difficult. Like it's not the scientific world is not in your favor as the person doing the science work.
No, so it doesn't get easier once you finish your PhD.
How? It actually almost hurts my heart a little bit to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Because I've seen you work so fucking hard over the last year. And it's like, oh, well, if you want to keep going, it's not going to get any easier.
But, so the thing is that once you finish your PhD, if you want to stay in science, you do a postdoc, you do a postdoctoral work.
Right.
And in that, you compete with everybody else for like junior research group positions.
Okay.
And there's very limited amount of numbers. So basically, once you finish your PhD, you're still expected to work 13-hour days, 7 days a week, and like take very little holidays. And then on top of that, as a woman, that is also the time where you then have to decide whether you want a family or not. Because usually you're just in that age then. You don't have time to wait another 10 years. So you don't have time to wait until you're settled. And like also that settled position never really exists in science.
Is it balanced at all between like men and women? Or is it more like a male dominant? When I think science, I mean, in my head, I assume that it's probably a little bit more male dominated
I think it depends on the field, but in neuroscience, it's usually when you go on a PhD level, it's 50-50. But then when you go after the PhD, so postdoc level, it's a lot more men mm-hmm. than women. It's mm-hmm. like 80-90% men.
Oh, wow. It's almost that much.
Yeah, because I think the real reason is that most women just decide that they want to have a family.
Okay.
And there's just... I mean, you have to be extremely lucky to be able to do that in any way. I know very few women who manage to do that.
So does that mean I'm going to be a stay-at-home dad?
Maybe.
Yeah. I think I could be a good stay-at-home dad.
I think you would like that. But I mean, I still want to see my kids too.
You know?
I don't want to have a kid and then hand it over to you and be like, okay, choose. No,
that kid's going to have some problems. The kid is going to have some problems. If it's just me, that kid's going to run hot just like me. We're going to be explaining things to teachers and principals mm-hmm. all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was my fault. And you're going to be like, it's his fault, okay?
Yeah. But the kid will also be like, who are you? I never see you.
No.
See? I don't want that either.
I don't want that.
No. Okay. No, so, yeah. I mean, science is a tough field. I mean, it doesn't mean that it's not worth it.
Sure.
I think there'll still be a lot of opportunities outside of science. But it's just sad that they make it so hard for women to be successful in science. I mean, it's hard for men, too, but they don't have that much pressure, just on a biological level to make a decision for a family or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's just...
It is what it is.
It is what it is, yeah.
People hate when I say that, but I like saying it.
Das Leben ist kein Ponyhof.
Das Leben ist kein Ponyhof.
Yeah.
Genau. And, you know, I think we're at a point now, too, where it's fun to see you be able to get back into training. And now that you're here in the States, being able to take some time to finish your thesis and hang out at the gym with me, which is awesome.
It's great. I love it.
It's been fun. I've gotten so used to training by myself and just having, you know, communication with you and communication with Mark and but being kind of on my own to motivate myself and these things, it's been nice to have you in the gym.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, you know, one from, you know, I guess it's kind of not showing off, but you know, I want to perform well in front of you.
Yeah.
I don't want to do poorly. But you know, it's like I said with that deadlift.
No.
Was that yesterday?
That was yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah.
I definitely could hear your voice in my head because you weren't there yesterday when I was training.
Yeah.
You had an off day, and it was like, yeah, I better fucking nut up and pull this thing off the floor. Like, let's get after it.
Yeah, you don't want to come home and be like, babe, I bitched out.
No, because I knew you were waiting for me to send that video.
Yeah,
so it's like, you better get on this thing and just let it rip.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no matter what, you better keep pulling and finish the lift, even if it's really bad.
Yeah,
you better finish the lift. Mm-hmm. So because I was like, if I wasn't gonna send it to you if I missed that lift.
Yeah.
You probably would have seen it eventually, but I was fighting sending that to you for sure.
Yeah.
For sure I was.
I'm proud.
If I would have missed it, but I didn't.
No, you did not. I made the lift. You did very well.
I made the lift. All right, well, I think that's where we'll end it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah. Do you have Do you have anything else you want to put on the podcast?
Always lift heavy and eat a lot of food.
I like that.
That's what I live by. Works well
so
for me.
So auf Deutsch, das ist immer ziehen schwer.
Yeah.
Und essen ganz viel essen. Ganz viel essen.
Yeah.
Für jetzt und immer.
Für jetzt und immer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Danke schon, meine Liebe.
Bitteschön.
Ich liebe dich.
Ich liebe dich.